Hey, good morning. Welcome to Faithfully Memphis. Today's episode includes some discussions of self-harm, suicidal ideation, and other sensitive topics. Please take care while you're listening. If you or someone you know are having a mental health emergency, you can dial 988 to reach SAMSHA.
Hello, and welcome to Faithfully Memphis. This is Maggie Schaumwaffle with the Episcopal Diocese of West Tennessee. Every Thursday at 8 a.m., we have the opportunity to speak with interesting people and to learn about the role that faith plays in their lives and the roles that they play in our community. We are broadcast from WYXR 91.7 FM in Memphis, Tennessee. Today we're here joined by representatives of the Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South. We have Sarah Cowens, who is the board president of the center, and we have Dr. Carolyn Martin, who is on the board of directors, and she's a counseling psychologist. Welcome to Faithfully Memphis, y'all. I'm glad you're here.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning. And can you give us a history a bit? Tell us about what is the Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South?
Thank you, Maggie. The Samaritan Counseling Centers of the Mid-South started in about 1981 when Doug Bailey, who was the rector of Calvary at the time, started having conversations with his outreach committee about the need for some pastoral care, counseling to people in the downtown area. And so that started the discussion about having something that not only maybe Calvary was involved in, but other Episcopal churches in the diocese. And so that started the Episcopal Counseling Center in 1981. And that lasted for about 5 years. And in 1986, the director at the time affiliated with the national organization called Samaritan Counseling Centers. And that's when we changed our name in 1986.
So a priest at Calvary Church said, and pastoral care is the idea of looking out and seeing the people and helping the people around us.
Right,
right. The job of,
yes,
to be the hands and feet of Jesus out in the community.
Absolutely.
And to help wherever we can, whomever we can, right?
Right. Exactly, exactly.
And then officially became a Samaritan Counseling Center in 86?
In 86, yes. And since 81, it has been helping people in the community, and it has grown in terms of the locations of where people can go to see a therapist, and we've had ebbs and flows of having more therapists, fewer therapists at different times, but for a continuous period, it has been seeing clients and helping those that that are in need.
And listeners, I can't wait for y'all to hear this bit right here, because there's something so special about the Samaritan Counseling Centers of the Mid-South, and that is the relationship with the patient. So tell us what makes it unique than any other therapist, doctor, or, you know, in the community that you could go to.
Well, what's special about Samaritan Counseling Centers at the moment is that we have space, and we have the ability to see clients. If you call and it's a fit for us, then we can start on that journey. But we take everybody. We take people who have insurance. We take those clients that don't have insurance. We have a sliding scale that determines how much that you could pay. And then we also have a low fee supplement account where if you don't have money, we are able to supplement that visit for our therapist, which is pretty unique within the city for sure.
I mean, it's big to me in my heart and the people I talk to, people who have jobs, who have health insurance, and still say, but I can't afford that. I can't afford to go and get the mental help that I need because I can't afford it, even if I have insurance.
Right.
And I, you know, to be in a situation where you might not have insurance and you have very low income, or you're, you know, I mean, to be able to say, this matters and it matters enough for me to get it. And that's what the Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South is doing, is saying, this matters so much that we'll find a way.
Right.
We'll find a way to get you the help that you need. If you're not a good fit for Samaritan Counseling Center, we'll figure out where you are a good fit, right?
And we are so lucky, and through since 1981, we have had therapists that have been committed to our mission of helping those people, even if you don't have the funds to play. I mean, not having money does not preclude your opportunity to get care with us. And luckily, we are able to do that by the generous donations of a lot of people who, through the years, have kept that fund, our low-fee assistance fund, going. So
it's from individuals, just folks who
absolutely.
Say, it matters to me that these people are getting the help, that everybody's getting the help that they need, and mm-hmm. that these therapists are giving of themselves this talent too, because they see the population that needs it.
Absolutely.
And so it's individual donors and group donors that make the low fee supplement fund happen.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. Yes. And we couldn't do it without them and or the therapists who are willing to take those clients, because you could be in private practice. All the therapists could go into private practice, and then that oftentimes they don't take insurance at all because they don't want to.
Because they can't afford to.
They can't afford to.
They can't afford to take the insurance or to see the people that they would like to be able to see. And something really neat, Sarah, that you told me the other day was that it's not free. It's not a free service. Tell me
right.
about that.
Well, we it's important for the person that is coming to be committed to it, and I would say buying into that this is the help that they need. And I mean, and that could be $5 or $20, but it's something.
This service that you're receiving is a service of value, mm-hmm. and you have the dignity. You have the strength and the dignity to give what you can
right.
for this service.
Right. Absolutely.
Oh, love that. And what does the process look like if somebody wants to?
Well, you can go to our website, SamaritanMidSouth.org, or you can call us, and then we will talk to you, make sure that you're a fit for what we don't do any crisis. Immediate. Is that
we don't deal with anyone who maybe is suicidal, and I think probably really chronic, long term, serious mental health issues, schizophrenia would not be a good fit for the services here. But I must add, just jumping in, we have 7 therapists now. We'd like to have more. We're hoping that our fundraising is going to support that, as well as an executive director that we're going to be hiring, hopefully. But these therapists are high-quality folks. They are highly professional people. So when you come, you're not going to get somebody who is straight out of school. And I definitely was straight out of school at one point, and I know that I didn't know very much at that point. So I just want to tout the level of professionalism that you would receive through therapy with the Samaritan Counseling Center. It is stellar, and it runs a gamut of expertise. One of the things that I think we offer that is unusual is the premarital counseling, which a lot of churches have a difficult time. Ministers, they just have a hard time fitting that into their schedule. So our therapists, several of them, are able to provide that. And that, I think, is, you know, just as you consider it, it's like that would be a very important service to have as people are considering making that decision.
I mean, when we look at mental health, our interpersonal relationships and the health of those relationships, that is, you know, it's our foundation,
yeah,
and that's how we grow. So we need to make sure that we can be as healthy as we can when we're interacting with each other, especially the intimate people in our lives.
Right.
And I do want to mention real quick, we were talking about suicide or deep psychological issues. Mm-hmm. There is a SAMHSA national helpline that people can call, and I just want to say that number real quick. It's 1-800-662-HELP. So if that's the help that you need, you could call them and they're available. That's a hotline right there, people waiting for you.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to put that out there.
Memphis has a crisis center too. So that is also can be phone or walk in. I used to work years ago with that organization. So yes, there are definitely other ways of getting help in the community for those kinds of really acute extreme problems.
And we, you know, we try to match our therapist with the right, with the specialty that maybe your issue is at the time. And we can do adults, children, adolescents, and we do telehealth also. And it just depending on your schedule and all of those things. So it takes it kind of a little back and forth conversation to make sure that you get to be with the person that is best suited to help you.
So for different types of issues that people are dealing with addiction or codependency or anxiety or depression. So y'all have therapists. So tell me about the range of, so you said you see children, you see adults. What are some other types of therapy, Dr. Martin, that people would be coming to y'all for?
Well, there's a lot of things. We both got lists here. Yeah. We can go down. There's so many things that they want, but the treatment that we provide, addictions, aging issues, anger, anxiety, ADD, bipolar, childhood trauma, codependency, conflict resolution, depression, domestic violence, divorce and separation counseling, eating disorders, end-of-life issues, grief, LGBTQ issues, learning disorders, men's issues, women's issues, and maybe even career transition issues as people, because we all know post-COVID, there's a lot of employment displacement that has gone on, and people are now struggling to perhaps find their way either back to where they were or to something else because where they were no longer exists. And that also then promotes all that financial anxiety that goes on with people. So I think for us today, COVID hit our whole community, our whole world hard. And we're now trying to pick up the pieces, if you will.
If you weren't dealing with any of those issues prior to COVID, I challenge anybody to look at that list and not say, oh, check, check, check. Right. I mean, it is. That's the human condition, right? Well, and we need help navigating it.
Yeah, I think COVID, whatever was pre-existing within a family, within an individual, within a community, COVID just blew it out of the water.
It was an accelerant, right?
Exactly was. And so when that all came to fore, there wasn't enough help to be provided for people. And so people really struggled. And that's why we saw the suicide rate go up. The statistics for adolescents, they're heartbreaking, quite frankly. I was kind of looking at some and made a couple of notes here. Kaiser Foundation, we're talking about young adults 18 to 24 have more mental illness symptoms and about half compared to one third of the adults overall. So these young people, 18 to 24, they're really struggling. We know kids in high school, girls more than boys, but boys as well, struggled with feelings with anxiety, depression, and of course the more serious one was suicidal ideation, serious consideration of suicide. And that all escalated during and post-COVID.
And it's isolation. The tendency that we have as humans to isolate and to not talk about these things, right? It has to lead and feed into these problems that we have. And so it's almost like it makes it worse. Like the more you feel bogged down by these issues, the more you want to isolate and not talk to somebody. And what we know is that's not the way to go.
And also remember that an adolescent, the number one thing they want is they want connection with peers. Mm-hmm. They're not particularly interested in adult intervention. They want to have connection with peers. And it's not the same. You can do so much over social media, but there is something to be said about being in school, seeing your friends, having that kind of interaction. And that was lost to them. And so many of these children, they really did get lost and they felt hopeless because it's hard when you're a kid. You don't have a prefrontal lobe that's fully developed. You're not able to see down the road and think this will actually get better. It's not always going to be this way. And so these children, it was like, you know, it's lost to me. This is how it's always going to be. This is how I'm always going to feel.
I mean, their world is smaller than ours. They have less experience. It makes sense that that's what they know and that's what they can see. They can't see further down the road.
Well, and can I just jump in? And then at Le Bonheur, in the last 2 years, they've seen a 56% increase in the number of children reporting thoughts of suicide or actual attempts. And statewide, that the number of suicide crisis calls during the pandemic multiplied by five. And about 40% of the U.S. population are now reporting anxiety, up from 10%. So
it's a mental health crisis.
Right. And I think what's wonderful, the crisis, of course, is not wonderful, but at the same time, I think the talking about mental health and paying attention to our mental health and how that our mental health permeates everything is something that we are now talking about. And I think that that's the real win, I mean, for everybody. Because if we can get people to work on their mental health, then we're going to help everyone.
And so in part, some of the stigma of having a mental illness, or just having maybe not a full-blown mental illness, but having features of, symptoms of, the stigma of that is seems to be reduced now. That people, I know they will say to me, oh, do you know this therapist? I went to this therapist. They're more open about seeking help. And of course, mental illness is just something that is going on in your brain, in your mind, the way you think. When we have a problem with, our heart's not working properly, or we have, a stomach problem or something, we don't have any problem going to a medical doctor. So what we're hoping is that people begin to see mental illness like a physical illness. I go and get to the specialist and get help for it, because there is help to be had and I can get better. And that is the hopeful part, mm-hmm. I think, of what Samaritan Counseling and any other counseling center does. We offer hope, mm-hmm. that you don't always have to feel this way and you're not alone.
That's beautiful. Thank goodness for removing that stigma. It's silly that we even just try to operate under that. And one thing with COVID too, I wonder if, and with our tendency towards social media, instead of being in the space, in a spot with people, would cause us to be more entrenched in our own narratives and our own cognitive issues that we stay in, instead of looking outside of ourselves. And I think one question I have for you. So what if I'm a person, I think, oh, I'm perfectly healthy. My mental state is great. I don't have any children that are dealing with these issues. If you think you don't have any family members that are dealing with these issues, I think you're lying to yourself. Like, let's just examine. But why should it matter? Why should it matter to me that my community be well in mental health?
Well, we see what happens when a community is not well. Mm-hmm. We see what has happened in Memphis. Mm-hmm. We have an awful lot of violence right now. In fact, I think we've been called the most violent city in the country, which is horrifying, and hopefully that will change over time. But it does matter, because we all live in a community. Mm-hmm. And so if you are not struggling, then I think it's incumbent to help those who are. And you don't have to be a therapist to do that. You can provide funds, mm-hmm. to support a nonprofit like SCC that can help people.
Somebody who's out there, boots on the ground, doing
Absolutely.
The work,
yeah.
finding the people.
Yes. Yeah.
And finding the people is its own challenge, because it's this is poverty related as well, right? Where y'all are working, what y'all are trying to right. do. And so tell me more about that, Karen.
Well, the poverty level, I kind of did a little bit of research, and the poverty level in, I believe it's Shelby County, not just the Memphis area, but Shelby County, right now we stand at about 23% of our population lives in poverty. 33% of those people are children. So now we start talking about the impact of poverty, living in poverty, and especially on children and adolescents. And we get to that topic that we briefly talked about before we went on the air, about ACEs, the adverse childhood experiences, and what that actually means.
Tell us what ACEs, what are adverse childhood experiences?
Okay, so they could be things from like domestic violence in the home. They could be financial hardships. They could be neglect, emotional, physical abuse, sexual abuse. Kind of blanking on, there's a range of them. These things seem to happen more within communities where there is a higher level of poverty. And so the children that live within those communities, the adverse effect of that, the compilation, the combination of them adding up, because you come into the world as a newborn, you live in that kind of environment, what begins to happen is both physically and psychologically, there begin to be changes. And as we talked about earlier, there can be things that happen. I read an analogy that having this kind of chronic, what they call toxic stress. If you've grown up in that kind of world and that environment, it's akin to having a car that is revved up for 2 weeks nonstop. You think about what happens to a body that is revved up because of fear, anxiety, hopelessness, all of those things. And so that begins to change the physiology of that person. So now we have things like diabetes, heart disease, in addition to propensity for substance abuse, because the body and the brain begin to change as a result of that chronic stress. So you begin to see this cycle and you think, how in the heck do we stop this? And we stop this by talking about mental health, like we're doing today, by offering services within the community, by educating people that there are services to be had, and by encouraging them that if you don't have enough money, we can help you with that. Because tell somebody and let's make a referral. And that's where our, I think, our ministers and our priests come in, because they see these walking wounded folks and they now have a place where they can refer them without having the door slammed in their face, because a private practitioner cannot take them because they don't have the money to pay for that service with that private practitioner. We can.
And if somebody has means, some financial means, I think our priest and have a several places that they can refer that person. But if the individual does not, really Samaritan is the only place that they can refer. Because we are one of the only people that are able and willing to take those people and to work with them on what they can pay.
So how does a faith leader go about doing that, referring somebody to y'all? And what's that process look like?
They would just pick up the phone and give us a call.
Okay.
Yes, we have a phone number. It is, yes. Make sure I get it right, it's 729-3900, I believe.
Yes.
Is that right, Sarah?
I think so.
Yep, 729-3900. It's the easiest way. You'll get a recording, but that will be answered usually by the end of that day by a lead therapist. They'll find out what the problem is, and then they will be triaged to the appropriate therapist who maybe deals with that kind of issue. There is on the website, there is an intake form that new clients then fill out, and then they can send that in, so that a therapist is really primed at that point to be able to help that individual quickly.
Will, and I want everybody to know that our show notes for the podcast will have these phone numbers,
right.
We'll have these statistics, so if you're driving, just keep on driving, or if you're sitting there, whatever you're doing,
right.
You'll be able to get all this information. We'll have it ready for you. We're talking to representatives from the Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South, and that's Sarah Callens, who is the president of the board, and Dr. Carolyn Martin, who's on the board of directors. And we were talking before our break about ACEs, which are adverse childhood experiences, and how they matter, and how it grows, and it almost exponentially, like it does compound as people age. I mean, if you have instability in your home and you are in a constant state, if your hippocampus thinks that you're in a constant state of danger, even if you're sitting in the classroom, you're not going to know what 2 + 2 is, because your body is in fight or flight mode, right? Is that correct?
That's correct. It's yes. And once that happens, you're right. You don't, all you're thinking about is survival. So learning 2 + 2 becomes pretty unimportant when survival is, all that you can think about, all that you know, because of your environment and the exposure to that environment.
So it seems to stand to reason. So if they're adverse childhood experiences, these are children and their experiences in the home, for the caregivers, the adults in the home, or people who see the adults in the home, to say, this is a really stressful situation. Things seem really, really hard for you right now. Let's find some help.
Remember too, Maggie, that these adults in the home, they probably also are products of adverse childhood experiences. So we have multi-generations that are trying the best they can to get along. And the best may be not great in terms of outcome, but when you're doing the best you can, that's just the best you can. And you're right, asking for help or having somebody notice. Sometimes, though, that help is kind of people are a little suspicious of it. They're not quite sure what the agenda is. So you have to be careful about how you approach that. And also people want to be, they don't want to be seen as crazy. I know in my own practice, a lot of times people, what they wanted was reassurance that they weren't crazy. Or children would come and they would say, you know, I know that you all think that I'm crazy. So scared. As opposed to not crazy, just in a lot of pain.
Or a normal person having a reaction to abnormal circumstances is what I like to tell myself throughout the day. And when I'm driving down 240, I say, this person's doing the best they can with the tools they have. So I love that, Dr. Martin. Yes, like let's just see each other and see that, you know, people might be struggling and that we can see each other and be vulnerable and say, I am struggling. Something feels off. Let me get the help that I need. And Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South is a place to do that. And we got to touch on the name, the Samaritan Counseling. I mean, the Samaritan, earlier, and y'all, I might have in this show called it the Good Samaritan Counseling, which it's not. It's the Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South. That's the correct name. But the story of the Good Samaritan, if folks out there aren't familiar with it, it comes from a parable that was told by Jesus. About there is a Jewish man who was walking down the road and he was traveling and he was attacked by some bandits and he was beaten and he was robbed and he was left on the side of the road. And then some other folks came by and saw this man, some highly respected people in the community walked by and saw this Jewish man on the side of the road and they crossed to the other side of the street. They either couldn't be bothered or were afraid to help. It makes sense. It's scary. It's scary to see people in need and in help. And it is. It's our human condition to say, I need to save myself. I need to stay away from this crisis because I want to keep myself safe. So a couple of different groups passed by and did not help. Then a Samaritan, who Samaritans and Jews did not get along in the day, he had no reason to stop and help this man, but he did. He went and he helped the man. He helped clean him up, put him on his donkey, and took him to an inn and got him a place to rest, paid for it, and said, anything this man needs, I will help. I will help. I will help with what he needs to get better. He saw somebody who had no relation whatsoever to him and said, I can help, so I will help. And it's very much like who is your neighbor? Who are we if we are going to be our brother's keeper? Who are our brothers and sisters in this world? And who are our neighbors as we walk on this earth? Whatever your faith, whatever your faith or not faith, we are a community. That's we are human beings being together in this community. And we look around and we're in it together. We are in it together. So if there's a child somewhere in Memphis who is suffering from adverse childhood experiences, it affects me in just my wellness in the world, my position as, for me, as a Christian woman in this universe. It matters to my heart and to my soul that this person needs my help. I don't know this person. They're not related to me in any way, but this person needs my help. So I'd like to hear some more. Actually, do y'all have anything to add about the parable of the Good Samaritan in the center?
Well, I think one of the things that's so unique about this Samaritan Counseling Center is that our offices are in different churches and then we have a house. But we are at Germantown Presbyterian Church. We have an office there. We have an office at First Baptist Church. We have an office at Church of the Holy Communion. And we also have a house, which was given to us by Idyllwild Presbyterians. So we are crossing all face all different types and anyone, and you don't have to have a religious affiliation to call us. We see everybody and we're going to see you where you feel most comfortable to be seen.
And I want to touch on too, for me in my past, I know that I was hesitant to go and see a therapist or see somebody who was operating out of a church because what I said in my head is, oh, they're just going to tell me to pray it away, or I'm not working hard enough on being a good person. That's what I thought was going to happen. And they were going to use religion to tell me that my mental and emotional state was because I wasn't being religious enough. Or so I mean, the therapists, tell us about how that just can't be the case with some
Absolutely. Well, and our mission is to offer hope and healing through high quality, affordable, accessible, and professional counseling while respecting the personal and spiritual values of the individual. And that's our mission. And we meet you where you are on that spectrum.
And speak to the professional value of that, Dr. Martin, with a therapist sitting in the room with an individual. I mean, can you tell me how that would come into the relationship, if at all, or not at all?
Come into the relationship?
With religion and faith.
You know, if people bring that up, then they open the door, and that becomes, that's something that they want to talk about. I think any professional therapist is going to try to maintain a neutrality and wait for that door to open. So people don't have to be worried that religion is somehow going to be shoved down their throat. Mm-hmm. But if they want to talk about it, because a spiritual issue, that is at the core and the essence of us. So even if you have issues with money, we still can't discount that the spiritual aspect of yourself does not need to be addressed in some form or fashion. Mm-hmm. And I also want to mention, we kind of bypassed a little bit about that Samaritan, that in terms of what we do. And I was just thinking about our therapist. They could go and they could be in more lucrative positions. But I think these men and women, they are doing this because of what you just said. They are helping their neighbor. They know that what they offer is life-giving in many respects. And they're a little bit sacrificial in providing that.
A lot. I mean, they could be out making a lot more money.
Which is why I'm going to plug the fundraising that we do. We do it low-key. It's not any high pressure. But if anyone is listening to this broadcast, if they want to put their money into an organization where it really, really does make a difference, and all that money goes to the therapist and the running of the facility, doesn't go to board members, any of that kind of stuff, I want to put a plug in for us, because it always has been, even before I was on the board, one of the places. Well, even as a practicing therapist, I would refer to the Samaritan Counseling Center when I had clients that I either couldn't take or they didn't have the means to be able to meet my B scale at that point, which was sad.
Because it bears saying too, we're saying how sacrificial, or that there is an element of sacrifice that the therapists take on, but they are compensated. Like they are highly valuable therapists, wonderful at their profession.
Absolutely.
Skilled. I mean, have all the education and background, and it's a treasure to be able to be treated by any of these individuals. So it's not like it's a discount on the service you're getting at all. Right?
Exactly.
It's just a different model. It's mm-hmm. just a different model than what we have maybe in the for-profit mm-hmm. therapy business.
And we couldn't do it without our therapist. And we, as Carolyn had said earlier, we're trying to raise money so we can hire even more therapists mm-hmm. so that we may serve more people.
Wow. Because one thing, let's talk about the process, the wait to getting in to see a therapist at Samaritan.
Right. Yes. Again, you can call or get on the website and send us a message, and we will get back to you. And I think probably in about 5 days
I think once the call goes in, we have a lead therapist who will then follow up with that call, make a call back to the individual, find out what the issue is, make a decision about who to triage that to, because he knows the other therapist well. That's kind of part of his job. And then that therapist will then call that individual back, setting up an appointment. And I mentioned that one of the therapists told me that he can see people in fewer than 5 days, typically. Gosh. And he also returns that call. Once it is referred to him, he returns that call to that potential client that day.
That is amazing to me. And that just shows what the center can do and does do. I mean, the quality of the care, and being able to see a whole person and treat mm-hmm. that whole person the way we know that they need to be treated. Because right. as we said, like other therapists, they don't have the means to be able to do that, to be able to respond as quickly. Their voicemail boxes are probably full all the time right now. They can't.
Well, and that's part of our model as well. These churches that we have partnered with have provided office space for our therapist. Mm. And so that is a bill that the therapists don't. If you're in private practice, you're paying for your space and you've got bills that go along with that. And for us, we've been lucky to get donated space, which helps us focus our donations onto the therapists and the seeing clients that can't afford it.
That's lovely. It's almost like in the parable, in the metaphor, that the churches are like the innkeeper who will hold that space, mm-hmm. like literally, physically, in prayer and heart, like hold that space for the therapist and the individuals doing the right. the good and hard work right. that they're doing.
Exactly.
And you were mentioning about like the top, the treatments, the type of treatments that the therapists are providing.
One of the therapists, I just asked him to just give me within the last year or so, what would have been the top three issues that he primarily treated. And it's no surprise, anxiety number one, mm-hmm. depression number two, and relationship problems number three. And whatever that relationship problem can mean, marital, it can mean parenting, it can mean aging parents. We have a lot of issues with being a caregiver, but the parenting issues, I think that is, that's a difficult one. And we have therapists who really are good at that, helping with managing whatever is going on with the child and the parent and actually mediating that to a certain degree. So mm-hmm. those three are the top. And of course, there are many others that fall below that. But I would say, just from my own personal experience, when COVID began, the anxiety diagnosis probably doubled at that point. If everybody remembers, we were all wiping canned goods down mm-hmm. and worried about talking to our neighbor because we were so scared we were going to get sick and die. And that's the other point, the loss that COVID brought about, just loss not only in going to school or work, but the death that occurred, the losses within families, not being able to say goodbye to a parent, a grandparent, a loved one. That in and of itself, those grief issues have compounded subsequent to the really active phase of COVID. And I think we all have to kind of keep that in mind. Just loss and grief issues mm-hmm. on so many levels.
So many levels. I mean, absolutely. People lost people they loved and or knew or are dealing with people who lost people they loved. And the things who, you know, I try very hard to say that, you know, suffering isn't comparative. To say, you know, my kindergartner didn't get to do X, Y, or Z right. at school. And that was a loss.
Yeah.
Just for our world that might, for some people, if you were lucky enough, have felt safe and stable. And then things got really loud. It feels like the noise of things that just trying to make a decision. That's what I had, decision fatigue, trying to say, what is safe? What's the best decision for me to make for my family?
Right.
And I think we were talking about living in this area, how we could have decision fatigue. Tell me more about that, like just how you have to consider your actions and...
Well, especially if you don't have anyone to bounce that off and you're trying to do it. If you're a single parent, if you're trying to manage all of that and make all of those decisions, just think, I mean, you use the word decision fatigue. Just the stress of that is going to create, therefore, the problems of anxiety, depression, hopelessness, substance use and abuse. So, again, it all kind of funnels in, feeds into, and we can know that these are triggers. So we look at the triggers as therapists, but then you go down underneath that and kind of figure out, is there a pattern here? Mm-hmm. What else is going on? Is this how you see the world? Mm-hmm. And then the therapist works from there to perhaps help the person kind of realize you're not alone. There is some help. There is a way out of this. Let's talk about things, even if it's just things like helping somebody learn how to relax. Mm-hmm. Sarah said earlier that she just remembers being in COVID and then maybe going someplace away and kind of feeling like, wow, I can breathe again. I can take a breath here. And so therapists, a lot of times, a lot of the things that they do to help people with decision fatigue or any kind of stress like that, they work on some relaxation strategies, some self-care. And that's another whole thing that people forget about. Parents who are so engaged in caring for their children or their their elderly parents themselves, they forget to take care of themselves. And so one of the things that we do as therapists is just say, let's just talk about you right now. If we can get you to be in a better place, I think you can then recapture your innate ability to make good decisions for yourself and for your family. And those things look like, sounds simple, exercise, good diet, sufficient sleep. And I know people say, yeah, I heard that. Well, the reason you heard it is because they work, they matter. They do contribute to a more balanced inner world, if you will, inner state. It's not the total solution, but it's something you have control over.
And one of our therapists had shared a story with us that we had a mom who had obsessive compulsive disorder, and she was so, and it caused her to be so anxious and fearful about choosing the right healthy food for her children. And she would get to the store and she couldn't decide, and she'd get there and then she'd leave and she wouldn't have bought anything. And so they were able to work together and taught her about thinking rationally through her decisions and managing some of this anxiety. And after 6 weeks, she was able to make those decisions and not be paralyzed by that anxiety. And she would not have been able to get that help if it weren't for our low-fee assistance fund. She was somebody that didn't have the wherewithal just to pick up the phone and call somebody for a full $200 session. And those are the types of people that we're seeing.
And I say, like, for me, so that's it. The lies that I'll buy into quickly are fear and scarcity and danger. And being in our beautiful city and walking around our beautiful city, like, we can tell ourselves stories. We make up a narrative of what is safe or what is not safe. And when I find myself focusing on scarcity and fear and danger, then I'm not focusing on the beauty of the world around me and the light and the love that my God provides for me, and health and well-being and the peace and the love of other humans that I can share this space with. So it's almost like you need to stop the record. Like, somebody's got to lift up the arm on the record player, because it's just, you know, it just won't stop. Mm-hmm. And that's what we can get. And we can see that we're all kind of, I mean, it is. It's that we all have this constant hum in the right area. And is it unique to Memphis? I mean, it can't be, obviously. It's a worldwide, universal, right, where we're human beings and dealing with it. But I want to say that it has to be compounded by, especially with recent events for Memphis and being able to see people who are broken and hurt and the way they act out and their brokenness and their hurtness and their mm-hmm. lack of mental health. Well-being.
Yeah, and, you know, treatment is not about denying reality. It's not about happy talk. There is such a thing as positive psychology and kind of thinking about, you know, things in the most positive way possible. But even that has its limitations when you're dealing with what I think we're seeing now in our community, which is an escalation in violence a community that seems like it is at war with itself sometimes. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so how you deal with somebody I had a client who was living in fear of just walking outside. And so you have to kind of put that in perspective. The world is a scary place, but you can't quit living. Mm-hmm. So how do you live in this place? How do you contribute to it to make it a better place? But also balancing it with just normal precaution, but not to the point of being so fearful that you become isolated in your own home, potentially becoming agoraphobic because you're too scared to step outside of what you have determined is safe.
Getting a reality check.
Yeah, so it's a balance of what's reality and also what then is maybe an escalation of fear to the point that you live in that experience of adverse experiences mm-hmm. because your body is now responding to that stress 24/7.
You
have to help people interrupt that and balance that.
Situational awareness. Know where you are and what actually, what's real? What is real right now? And finding the tools. Like if I am afraid, what are my tools that I have at my disposal? And when we're talking about mental health, like you said, you know, proper rest and exercise and nutrition are definitely tools. and the Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South. I mean, we say the mission again. Do you have
Absolutely.
That, Erica,
please? Yes. It is to offer hope and healing through high quality, affordable, accessible, and professional counseling while respecting the personal and spiritual values of the individual. And our philosophy is that the client's lack of ability to pay does not preclude service. And we welcome everyone. We encourage anyone to call, whether you have a religious affiliation or not, whether you have funds or not, whether you have insurance or not. We want to be available to those people who need help.
And y'all are working so hard, this board and there's just so much energy. There's so much energy behind this movement that y'all are, that Samaritan Counseling Center is this movement. And so you're welcoming, it's just, you've got the welcome mat out, the welcome flags for clients, for therapists, for donors, how do people go about helping with the low income supplement fund? Like, is that on the website?
Yes, they can go to the website and make a donation. They can call us and we can call them back and talk to them. And if they'd like to get together and learn more about the center, we're happy to do that as well. And
actually, on the webpage, there is a little button that you can click that says donate. And that makes it real easy
absolutely.
To take you to the site where you can make a donation. So it's a pretty simple process, kind of streamlined.
And we've really been lucky through the years to have people that have been dedicated to this mission. And, you know, we've had good times, we've had bad times, and probably about 2 years ago, the board needed another kind of re-energizing, and that's where we are now. And because everyone on the board is invested and knows that this is a issue that affects everybody. And if we can help those that can't traditionally get services, we want to be a part of that.
It affects everybody. Every single person out there who can listen to this or is not listening to this, it is affecting us all. And I feel the love and the warmth from the center and the hope. So what gives you hope at this moment? I mean, all of the things we're talking about. And what gives you hope?
Well, I think that we have had some really generous donations come in the past 2 years. And so that's really hopeful and exciting, because then that gives us the opportunity to hopefully hire 2 new therapists. And we'd love to hire an executive director part-time just to keep the focus on the needs. And instead of just trying to hope that people will send in money, just constantly be out there talking about it and meeting with people and being a resource for the people in the city that need help. I'm energized by that, because we need it. There are a lot of, you know, we've got a lot, as Carolyn said, some great therapists. We've just hired two new therapists that are specifically dealing with children. So we feel good about being able to offer that service into a underserved area.
Well, and I think too, if playing off the name Samaritan, Maggie, you said it's not called Good Samaritan, but I do think that there are Good Samaritans that that make up this organization. That's, you know, a very appropriate name, and we're willing and able and ready to help all of those in need. It doesn't matter who you are, any affiliation or not. And that, to me, is kind of the heart and soul of what energizes most of us, is that it is wide-ranging, broad. You know, we're reaching out in as many directions as we can, saying, let us help you.
Oh, the heart and soul of let us help, let us be part of this wellness revolution and make a change. And people will be able to contact y'all. We'll have it in the show notes.
Yeah.
They can have numbers, and you'll be able to reach the Samaritan Counseling Center. We'll also have some of the statistics for everybody there. Thank you so, so much for being here today. I feel energized. I feel hopeful. I'm excited to walk around the city knowing that Samaritan Counseling Center of the Mid-South is out there doing this good work. Thank you both so very much for everything and for being here this morning. This is Maggie Schaumleffel for Faithfully Memphis. Until next time, stay positive, stay safe. and stay well.